however, Shark Bay is a tourist attraction, or at least as much of a tourist attraction as a place hundreds of miles from anywhere much and dozens of miles from anywhere at all can ever be. Boardwalks have been built out into the bay so that visitors can stroll over the water to get a good look at the stromatolites, quietly respiring just beneath the surface. They are lusterless and grey and look, as I recorded in an earlier book, like very large cowpats. But it is a curiously giddying moment to find yourself staring at living remnants of Earth as it was 3.5 billion years ago. As Richard Forte has put it, this is truly time travelling, and if the world were attuned to its real wonders, this site would be as well known as the Pyramids of Giza. Although you'd never guess it, these dull rocks swarm with life, with an estimated, well, obviously estimated, 3 billion individual organisms on every square yard of rock. Sometimes, when you look carefully, you can see tiny strings of bubbles rising to the surface as they give up their oxygen. In 2 billion years, such tiny exertions raised the level of oxygen in Earth's atmosphere to 20%. Preparing the way for the next, more complex chapter in life's history. It has been suggested that the cyanobacteria at Shark Bay are perhaps the slowest evolving organisms on Earth, and certainly now they are among the rarest. Having prepared the way for more complex life forms, they were then grazed out of existence nearly everywhere by the very organisms whose existence they had made possible. They exist at Shark Bay because the waters are too saline for the creatures that would normally feast on them. One reason life took so long to grow complex was that the world had to wait until the simpler organisms had oxygenated the atmosphere sufficiently. Animals could not summon up the energy to work, as Forte has put it. It took about 2 billion years, roughly 40% of Earth's history, for oxygen levels to reach more or less modern levels of concentration in the atmosphere. But once the stage was set, and apparently quite suddenly, an entirely new type of cell arose, one with a nucleus and other little bodies collectively called organelles, from a Greek word meaning little tools. The process is thought to have started when some blundering or adventuresome bacterium either invaded or was captured by some other bacterium, and it turned out that this suited them both. The captive bacterium became, it is thought, a mitochondrion. This mitochondrial invasion, or endosymbiotic event, as biologists like to term it, made complex life possible. In plants, a similar invasion produced chloroplasts, which enabled plants to photosynthesize. Mitochondria manipulate oxygen in a way that liberates energy from foodstuffs. Without this niftily facilitating trick, life on Earth today would be nothing more than a sludge of simple microbes. Mitochondria are very tiny. You could pack a billion into the space occupied by a grain of sand, but also very hungry. Almost every nutriment you absorb goes to feeding them. We couldn't live for 2 minutes without them. Yet even after a billion years, mitochondria behave as if they think things might not work out between us. They maintain their own DNA. They reproduce at a different time from their host cell. They look like bacteria, divide like bacteria, and sometimes respond to antibiotics in the same way bacteria do. In short, they keep their bags packed. They don't even speak the same genetic language as the cell in which they live. It is like having a stranger in your house, but one who's been there for a billion years. The new type of cell is known as a eukaryote, meaning truly nucleated, as contrasted with the old type, which is known as a prokaryote, pre-nucleated, and it seems to have arrived suddenly in the fossil record. The oldest eukaryotes yet known, called Gripania, were discovered in iron sediments in Michigan in 1992. Such fossils have been found just once, and then no more are known for 500 million years. Compared with the new eukaryotes, the old prokaryotes were little more than bags of chemicals, in the words of the geologist Stephen Drury. Eukaryotes were bigger, eventually as much as 10,000 times bigger than their simpler cousins, and carried as much as 1,000 times more DNA. Gradually, a system evolved in which life was dominated by two types of form, organisms that expel oxygen, like plants, and those that take it in, you and me. Single-celled eukaryotes were once called protozoa, pre-animals, but that term is increasingly disdained. Today, the common term for them is protists. Compared with the bacteria that had gone before, these new protists were wonders of design and sophistication. The simple amoeba, just one cell big and without any ambitions but to exist, contains 400 million bits of genetic information in its DNA. Enough, as Carl Sagan noted, to fill 80 books of 500 pages. Eventually, the eukaryotes learned an even more singular trick. It took a long time, a billion years or so, but it was a good one when they mastered it. They learned to form together into complex multicellular beings. Thanks to this innovation, big, complicated, visible entities like us were possible. Planet Earth was ready to move on to its next ambitious phase. But before we get too excited about that, it is worth remembering that the world, as we are about to see, still belongs to the very small. 20. Small world. It's probably not a good idea to take too personal an interest in your microbes. Louis Pasteur, the great French chemist and bacteriologist, became so preoccupied with them that he took to peering critically at every dish placed before him with a magnifying glass, a habit that presumably did not win him many repeat invitations to dinner. In fact, there is no point in trying to hide from your bacteria, for they are on and around you always, in numbers you can't conceive. If you are in good health and averagely diligent about hygiene, you will have a herd of about 1 trillion bacteria grazing on your fleshy plains, about 100,000 of them on every square centimeter of skin. They are there to dine off the 10 billion or so flakes of skin you shed every day, plus all the tasty oils and fortifying minerals that seep out from every pore and fissure. You are, for them, the ultimate food court, with the convenience of warmth and constant mobility thrown in. By way of thanks, they give you B.O.